what applies to that from this conversation is most people lose interest in learning, like in their mid-20s. I've got what I've got, and now I want to be entertained, or I want to, whatever it is, that's filling the time vacuum that learning used to demand when they were learning. As soon as you give that up, as soon as you become content with a flattened learning curve, you are dead to the world.
Welcome to another episode of the Essential Craftsman Podcast. I'm Nate. I've got my dad here who's the Essential Craftsman. It's a day before he turned 62.
62 tomorrow. Nearly dead.
So nearly dead Eve.
Yeah.
First item of business, thanks to everyone who's left us a review on iTunes. I was scrolling through those. There's some good feedback there. And we're kind of taking some of that feedback to heart today. We're going to talk about something that is not related to YouTube. It's not related to our spec house. It's a new topic. It's not about craftsmanship, directly at least. And that topic is the learning curve. So maybe to start out with, Dad, why don't you just kind of outline how you think of the learning curve, or maybe how you've always thought about it and used it in speech and also in practice, maybe for someone who's never used or is familiar with that term.
So no expert, but I began to think about the learning curve more after I met Cy 15 years ago than perhaps I had before. And it was because as I was thinking about Cy and why he was so unique and why I didn't know that I had met anyone like him ever before, it dawned on me it was because he had been obsessed with learning new things all of his life. He has a list of hobbies and avocations that you wouldn't believe me if I ran through them. And so I was 45 years old, more or less, then, and with a little time left in my future. And I thought, you know, I'm going to learn something from that old man, and that is I need to attach more value to learning things. And so I read about it a little and thought about it a lot and realized right away, diving into blacksmithing, that the reason I was loving blacksmithing so much is because every project, every moment, every process was new learning, and it was coming like out of a fire hose for a while. And I was able to concentrate on that and realize how compelling that was. And I looked in the rearview mirror back over my life when I had felt most fulfilled by my activity every day, and I made the connection that it was always when I was learning the most. And my fulfillment was at low ebb in everyday activities when I had little or nothing to learn that day.
Yeah. And another way of looking at that point is what you ended on, how miserable may not be the right word, but just it is how mindless it can be to repeat tasks over and over, whether that's a task related to work, or certainly I felt that way in school a lot, where I was not learning anything, but I had to go through all of this effort, and man, it just really was kind of miserable, actually.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Unfulfilling.
Yeah, unfulfilling.
I love Jordan Peterson's way of expressing, you know, he says that life is not about happiness, it's about fulfillment. Okay, that's sort of syntax and different ways to say a similar thing, but fulfillment does seem to be it, and learning for a lot of people is key to fulfillment.
AVE did a video about the learning curve. I'm not sure when the video came out, but I watched it a year or two ago, and he made the interesting insight, and I recommend everybody watch this video. Maybe we'll link to it, and I'm sure we'll probably both watch it after this again just because it's on our mind now. But he made the interesting point that the learning curve doesn't start vertical right off the bat from day one. There's a period of time in most tasks or hobbies or sports or whatever where you're kind of not learning that much because you're doing the basics. You know, like if you were a kid in basketball, you might be learning the fundamentals, how to hold the ball and how to dribble and all the basic passes. And you have to like practice those drills. And actually my little boy who's six, he said this the other day, he is in a little basketball team, and he was talking about how boring it was because he already knows how to do all of that stuff. This is on his second practice. And he was wondering when he was going to be able to start shooting again. I was like, what do you mean by shooting? And he's like, you know, like take the ball and throw it. And I'm doing like an overhand throw motion. Point being, AVE pointed out that there is a period of time where you have to get through before you really start learning, and the learning curve kind of moves up.
Yeah, so first of all, AVE is brilliant, but you better brace yourself because he has the most creative and sometimes appalling locker room humor you have ever heard, but creative to the max. And so just be aware of that. Don't take your kids there until you've sort of checked it out for yourself. But he is a clear-thinking guy. I mean, he thinks much deeper about a lot of things than most of the rest of us. And as you were just telling me what you learned from him, I realized that's why blacksmithing was so compelling to me, because the flat part of the learning curve was passed because I'd been a carpenter and a welder. And I didn't have to learn that introductory stuff. I could go right to where the curve became vertical and compelling. And then, man, what a ride So that maybe is a pretty good reason to think about becoming a generalist in whatever your field is. I mean, we live in an age of specificity and specialization, right? And subcontracting and little knowledge niches, and people go deep rather than broad. But if there's a little breadth to what you know, then you can step into other areas and learn rapidly because you've paid your dues in a lot of other disciplines, maybe. Jack of all trades, master of none is oftentimes better than a master of one.
Yeah, the back half gets left off a lot. Yeah. And I've always felt like being a jack of all trades is something bad, or in other words, not ideal.
Right.
Almost like a slur.
Yeah.
And it may be. Now, regarding the learning curve, you have taken a few things to the highest end of that learning curve.
I don't know.
What would you say to that? Do you think you have?
I don't necessarily think I have, because, and maybe it's just that the fact that if you haven't learned it already, we all learn it eventually. There's always somebody bigger, faster, stronger, smarter, always. And so when we speak of taking something kind of to its zenith, we think, well, becoming the best there is. So that's not what we're talking about. I guess we're just talking about really significant mastery. So I don't know what it would be that I would point out. But I guess as far as a construction generalist, the ability to walk onto a site and have a reasonably good handle on almost everything and a really in-depth handle on part of it, maybe that. Mm-hmm. I don't know what else right now that I would point at.
Yeah, it might be a bad question, because the truth is, as we all know, you just can't learn everything. Any topic, any trade or field, there's just more there than you can usually learn in a lifetime.
Boy, that is the truth. And especially going back to blacksmithing, which I hearken back to too much, you know, there's the the aphorism of the craft that says a life so short, the craft so huge. And that's it exactly. Mm-hmm. That no one. So I guess that's the answer to your question. I don't think I have real mastery of anything, because everything is so complex. Significant mastery of some building processes, probably. And maybe that's the end of the list.
One of AVE's points was, points of advice was to take as many things up the learning curve as you can. And the way he drew it out, he identified a period of time at the beginning where you're kind of not learning all that much, all that fast. And, you know, like if it was a sport or a physical activity, it would be the period where you're kind of developing the muscle memory and you're strengthening and building the endurance.
Uh-huh.
And then after that period, you can really kind of get better by leaps and bounds. Uh-huh. And if you stuck at it for a decade, you would become a master. But his point was, get through that first phase, grow by leaps and bounds then as long as you kind of can. And even if you don't take it to the level of a master, just by getting through that tough phase at the beginning and just getting to the part of the learning process where you're learning quicker and more fluent, you can separate yourself and create real advantages by having... You don't have to go all the way to the level of master in order to kind of harness the power of the learning curve and add real skills to your repertoire.
And so maybe that speaks or implies that one of the first things we as humans have to learn in order to ever get on that curve where it begins to become steep is to learn how to learn. I mean, a lot of people either are not interested in learning how to learn or make the fatal assumption of that they already know everything that's important. I guess we all do that at one level or another. So maybe if we can't remain teachable, we will never get on any kind of a significant new learning curve ever. We will only have whatever learning curve we got partway up and where we came to the false conclusion that we had some sort of real, real capacity. So humility and maybe curiosity. Mm-hmm. Maybe curiosity is the other thing that has to be cultivated in kids. We talked about that with Cy a few weeks ago right here, right? Helping kids understand that they can do and learn anything. How do you inculcate that?
And Cy made the point on that day that he has known people who kind of thought they knew everything already, and whether mm-hmm. that developed at a young age or later in life, that really would kind of shut off your ability. If mm-hmm. if you think you already kind of know everything, it would be hard to learn something new.
Yeah.
Even if it presented itself right in front of you, it's almost like you wouldn't be used to recognizing it or expecting that there's right. something you could learn. And so that ability to be teachable and open, just as a mindset, might be part of the key to learning more. You know, don't think that there's nothing you can learn from whatever person is, you know,
in front of you. You know, scripture and wisdom literature worldwide, every culture, every tradition is full of this message, you know, that a fool despises reproach, but a wise man, if you correct him, will call you his friend, and those mm-hmm. kinds of things. And that's everywhere. Everybody who's lived long enough to have encountered anything like that realizes, yeah. wow, the biggest gift somebody can give you is to point out where you just don't know what you're talking about. And maybe I don't either, but it can change a mindset possibly.
It's sure different now, where a lot of these things, the information and the knowledge and the expertise we can all get almost instantly from our phones or computers mm-hmm. has to make an impact here. But I guess it would still be the same concept, and that is go find the information yeah. and be open to
yeah.
learning how to learn.
That's an interesting thing about seeking out information versus waiting to receive it. And I'm not really sure with the connection I'm going to make here, but as a rule of economic common sense and sort of practical financial stewardship, I just believe that if a deal comes to you, if a deal knocks on your door and says, here's this deal, that this product is going to improve your life, or if you miss this opportunity, right then it's about 90% certain that this is not good for me. But on the other hand, if it's something that you kind of have to search out and do a little research and talk to someone who talked to someone and educate yourself a little bit to find and identify the deal, it significantly increases the likelihood that it is going to, in fact, be a good deal. And I wonder if that can tie back to knowledge, too. The stuff that just comes floating in is maybe not as vitally important to your long-term happiness as the stuff that you identify as being important and roll up your sleeves and pursue. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. A lot of these things about how we learn and who we learn from are just so, it's just such a part of who a person is and how they go about this information, that it's just got to be different for every person. You know, I'm sure there's some people, in talking about deals, who a deal floats along and that's maybe the only way they like to
right.
find. They say, hey, I don't want to get carried away, I'm just going to wait for opportunity to show up and I'll seize right. it. You know, they might be able to look at that in the complete opposite
yeah,
way.
It's true.
And have a good point.
That's right. It's true. I guess I'm thinking of some people I know who figures that if a flyer comes out in the newspaper and it's 20% off on some product that they've been eyeing, that's the deal, because it's on sale and there it is.
There is so much noise and fuzz.
There you
and
go.
So much stuff that you got to kind of sift through, and like, it's not that you want to just fill your head with meaningless information or yeah. skills.
Yeah.
And that's pretty easy to do, for, you know, video games being a good example.
Yeah.
And I have taken, in college, I took some video games to an expert level. Great.
Right. Right.
Looking back, I wish I would have swapped that time to learn something else, anything else, to an expert
Chinese.
Level.
Chinese.
Anything.
Yeah.
Anything at all. Cutting hair.
Yeah.
And so that was me kind of, you know, falling. Although, to be fair, and I had good interactions with friends, and it was always a kind of social thing. So
sure.
that, you know, maybe I wouldn't actually trade that. I don't know.
So I wonder how opportunity costs coincide with or conflict with learning curves. How much time is there in life? And we've kind of touched on this with the craft so huge, the life so short. But can you sustain two or three vertical learning curves at the same time? How much, and is it person to person by person, I'm sure, and how much available time? And at what point do we start saying, wait a minute, I don't have time to take X, Y, or Z to significant mastery, so I'm going to go with A, B, C, or D to reasonable mastery. I know, Kelly, your mom, she's in a continual state of mourning that she's just picked up fiddle playing, old-time fiddle. She can do it, but she says, I don't have time left to get really good. And so she wonders, should she use the time she has left to try to take that up to where she's never going to be crushing it at competitions, but it'll just have more satisfaction? I don't know. And how do you, Cy never worried about that. If anything ever crossed his radar as being interesting, bam, he was on it.
Huh.
But he didn't take much to the 100% level.
Yeah.
He took a lot to the 90% level.
I read this book by Scott Adams, How to Fail at Almost Everything and Still Win Big.
Wow.
And he has a great, it's not a point, it's sort of a way of thinking about this. Collect as many skills as you can and bringing them to, you know, as high a level as you can make you the best in the world at something. For example, you are maybe among the best YouTube carpenter, blacksmith,
logger, yeah,
logger, public speakers.
So for you, I would see it from the outside as bringing a really sophisticated entrepreneurial sense and drive and ambition and creativity and digital familiarity. I mean, you've been a pretty good home-taught IT guy for quite a long time, and you educated yourself on YouTube when YouTube was young, and so it all kind of hit at the right time, right?
Among people who put content on YouTube and have a general understanding of blacksmithing and carpentry and can understand memes.
So maybe what we're talking here is a pop psychology term I've run across recently called convergence, where the different threads of your life all kind of converge in a particular moment at a particular place when circumstances line up to make that particular skill set or set of interests relevant. Mm-hmm. And so that now the divergent things that in and of themselves really were not remarkable at all.
Yeah.
The combination of those things amount to something completely different than any of them.
Yeah. I think Scott Adams called it like skill stacking or talent stacking or something like that. And the point being, stack as many different skills and trades and things as you can, and you can be something very good of that little stack. So in the trades, if you are an HVAC guy who can weld and who can also work for whatever reason, let's say with like really high voltage, like commercial stuff, you kind of understand that. Mm-hmm. And you kind of understand websites and how to put stuff on social media or Facebook or whatever. All of a sudden now, that's kind of a really unique combination of skills that might help that individual step away. And it could, maybe it's just the two. Maybe it's somebody who does leather working and also understands, like, I don't know, resins and epoxies, you know, for some reason those two items like have some overlap.
Or that goes everywhere, right? Somebody that grew up likes to repair the lawnmower engine, so pretty soon they're a mechanic and they end up getting a CDL and they end up learning how to run Excel spreadsheets. Yeah. All of a sudden now they're a key manager or a dispatcher or something for a trucking company.
Yes.
And who knows where that ladder can take you.
That's exactly it. So at that company, when there's a situation and they're like, well, what are we going to do? Oh, let's send this guy. He's a Swiss Army knife.
That's right.
Think about
AVE,
since we mentioned him already. Like, talk about a Swiss Army knife. I mean, that guy has an understanding of a lot.
Yeah.
And
yes,
wow,
he does.
I don't know how many things of let's say the individual skills or trades he has taken to a mastery level. It doesn't matter. Because
doesn't matter.
He is the master of the whole stack of skills. Nobody could be better
that's right.
at that.
That's track. Right. That's right. Including blasphemy and profanity. I mean, that's market too,
nobody's
right?
Nobody's better.
Nobody's better than that. Making up words that you can't say anywhere except on YouTube.
That's probably his most valuable skill. So this is, you know, this we're kind of talking about the learning curve in terms of business and maybe a person's career, which is certainly maybe one of the most useful ways to apply the learning curve. But we should probably kind of end on the fact that it could be used in just every way, you know, in your ability to engage in hobby and exercise, in reading, and probably even soft skills like, I don't know, maybe conversation and being friendly or things like that. Maybe there's a learning curve to some of those items as well.
So I think I've said this before on the channel, but I think about it a lot. Benjamin Franklin's quotation that most people die at around age 23, but they don't have the decency to lie down and be buried until sometime in their 70s. And I think that what he was speaking to, or at least what applies to that from this conversation, is most people lose interest in learning, like in their mid-20s. I've got what I've got, and now I want to be entertained, or I want to, whatever it is that's filling the time vacuum that learning used to demand when they were learning. As soon as you give that up, as soon as you become content with a flattened learning curve, you are dead to the world. Yeah. You're dead in terms of increasing your potential. You're dead in terms of what you can teach other people and model for your kids.
Yeah.
The whole thing about living as a learner, I think, cannot be overstated for happiness, fulfillment.
There's something so refreshing about being around, like you mentioned with Sai, about being around people who are curious.
Yes.
And who are interested in learning. And whether they're young or old doesn't matter, but just the energy from that type of person. And I guess I notice it with older people who look at maybe what I'm doing and are curious, like, wow, what is it? How does that work? And all of a sudden, it's just so energizing, like, wow, neat, you know, and it's attractive in the way that it makes me kind of want to like be around that person because, oh, wow. And I guess that's what you described about Sai. It's sort of.
I've never met anybody that epitomizes that more completely.
Yeah. Just for the listeners, rattle off the punch list of items that has involved himself in a serious way.
Okay, so growing up, he started building hot rods out of Model Ts, right? So he was building engines, and then he went to work as a teenager in an automotive repair shop so he could and started to learn to run lathes and stuff a little bit. And then the cowboy obsession, he became master-level horseman. Now, he would tell you that he could never take a cutting horse to its highest potential because he was a little heavy-handed.
What's a cutting horse?
A cutting horse... Cutting is a horse that is so almost always quarter horses, where just because he's fleet of foot, he can get with a rider on his back into a group of cattle and cut out a particular cow, just like a sheepdog would, that he's almost as agile and as quick on his feet with a man on his back or woman as a sheepdog would be inside a flock of sheep, and can cut out and learns to anticipate which of the animals the rider is trying to segregate and put in a particular place and leave the other animals there.
Does that describe like a skill that horse has learned, or just some have it and some don't, or what is that?
It describes athleticism and a skill that he's been taught.
Or maybe an intelligence level or something.
Yeah, and there's kind of, all of that.
So a cutting horse describes like a horse of a certain caliber.
A high-end cutting horse is as fully trained a horse as there is.
Okay,
fully
got
trained.
It, got it.
The rider is communicating with the horse in ways that really neither the rider nor the horse fully understand, but they have complete communication.
Now, what did he say about cutting horses?
That he could train a cutting horse, but he couldn't. So as a horseman, he would tell you, he only got up just so far because he couldn't take a cutting horse to the fine-honed edge. Oh. He couldn't make a cutting horse, starting at nothing, razor sharp, because he lacked patience.
Uh-huh.
But in terms of getting work out of horse flesh, there's nobody any better than Sai. Hmm. And so the whole cowboy and doctoring cattle and performing cesarean sections on his own cows when there was no money and the cow, he couldn't pull the calf. So,
Means stitches and like
that means proper open,
battlefield medical work.
Cut right to the right depth.
Yeah.
Okay, get the calf out, keep the calf alive, sew the cow up with whatever you got, pour in whatever you had for an antibiotic and keep her alive.
Yeah.
That takes a type of... So he understands crop rotation and feed cycles and the way cattle put on flesh, all of that. All right, so that was his livelihood. But add to that heavy equipment. He became an expert bulldozer and road grader, excavation guy, understands collecting water off of dry hillsides and making ponds, understands drainage and all those kinds of things. So add to that... one wife and three kids, all productive citizens. Add to that, he was a downhill snow skier, a rock climber, a serious scuba diver, a sea hunter. Okay, he would go scuba diving for meat, learn to sail for that reason, built a sailboat with the intention of sailing around the world, had a fit of sanity and gave up that idea.
This is only like 10 years ago, by the way.
Oh, built the boat 20 years ago.
But he only gave up on the idea when he was...
Right. 8 years ago. Yeah, I had to talk him out of it, pretty much, sort of.
The boat was there the first time I went to his place.
Yeah, sitting next to his shop, a concrete-hulled sailboat that he built.
What the heck?
Yeah.
And at that time, I think I might have asked him, he's like, well, I'm going to sail around the world.
Yeah.
Like, you're nuts.
Yeah. So I am bypassing so much stuff.
He plays music, right?
Okay, but first of all, hang gliding when hang gliding was dangerous, got a pilot's license. He ran 30 miles a week until he was 50 years old, a serious pistol shot, shoot 20 or 30 rounds every day so you could really shoot, developed the Celtic Games Edged Weapons Contest here in Southern Oregon, including making all of his own weapons, including traditional longbows.
Machining. He's a pretty decent
machinist. He's a machinist. He's got lathes and milling machines. He understands shapers. He's a welder. Yeah. Let's talk about music. He plays the piano, the guitar, the harmonica, the hammer dulcimer, and the bagpipes. Learned to speak a little Spanish. I'm forgetting things, but the point is made. He was voracious to learn. There was never a time, if he wasn't working, if he wasn't out of the house working, he was sitting in a chair reading a book. That's it.
Yeah.
Those were the ways he rolled.
And to this day, like you said, he's doing that. And I've noticed that even with the computer, a lot of folks from hip generation, it's kind of like, I don't do computers.
Yeah. He's 83.
He does computers. He wades in. It frustrates him and he bangs around. But like, I've never heard him. It's a different way that he has approached working with a computer that I noticed. Mm-hmm. Different than other 80-year-olds who are just kind of like, nah. Yeah. One time I was kind of watching him move around the computer and I was like, oh my word.
Yeah.
You kind of get around on this thing the way you should. In other words, if you can't figure it out, you solve it. It just was a different way of working the computer from what I expected.
Yeah.
Very neat. Well, if you can't tell, we're part of the Cy Swan fan club over here. And if you're not familiar with him, we've got videos of him doing all sorts of stuff.
I didn't even mention the blacksmithing.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, that was hopefully implied.
Yeah.
All right. So if you take something away from this, and I certainly have, there is something about learning. There's a mindset that you got to kind of maybe click into gear first about being teachable, which probably means acknowledging that you don't know everything about whatever. Here's a big point maybe we can end on. I think one of the reasons people are afraid to start or learn something new is because you may be an expert at some trade or hobby or skill. And by starting a new one, you immediately become a beginner.
Big time.
And it can be kind of shocking to all of a sudden be really bad at something.
Yep.
And I think some people, once they've been really good at something, they're kind of like, they're used to that persona. And so all of a sudden being terrible at something is not interesting to them.
So that is so
overcoming
true.
That is might be a barrier.
So we're talking about ego. Ego can be a barrier to learning,
that's
right? So just a couple other things, and we're wrapping this up. You've probably heard plenty of us kind of freestyling on something that we perhaps haven't learned enough about. But I worked with a guy in Las Vegas. I was working union at the time. And we called out somebody from the hall, and he showed up with having a pre-existing relationship with a couple of the guys on the job that had responsibility. And he'd been doing it for 20 years. And I hadn't been around much. And he and I got into a little collision of wills over something. And I don't remember how it was phrased, but he said, you know, in a very derisive term, look, I've been doing this for 20 years, with the implication being that I should shut up, stop thinking, and do what he said. Well, it quickly became apparent that he had not done this in the sense of learning this for 20 years. He had done it for a couple of years. He had learned for a couple of years and then repeated that 2-year increment about 9 times. Okay. He was not interested in adding anything to his skill set for what you just articulated, that to make yourself vulnerable, which is key to being a learner, to make himself vulnerable and learn something new from anybody, he saw as being an unacceptable cost.
Wow.
And then the last thing, which I think is probably the highest value for remaining a learner, for those of you who have kids, and I hope that is the vast majority of you, is that if your kids don't see you valuing learning personally, if they see you valuing distraction and entertainment above learning, then anything you say to them about the value of learning is nothing but perceived hypocrisy and hot air, right? There is no reason for them to listen to it. So modeling living as a learner is about the best thing you can do if you have kids.
Is there any big zone of learning or hobby or skill or something that you kind of still have your heart set on learning or picking up or squaring up to someday?
Okay, so this is a subset of blacksmithing, right? Blades, knives, swords.
He's got a big, roughed out Bowie knife in his hand
I've got two matching Bowie knives in my hand, and they're twisted. They're a Damascus, just a simple twist. And every time I think of approaching a knife, especially with a camera running, I'm reminded, I don't know anything about knife making, really. Mm-hmm. I have enough blacksmithing skill that I think I'm past the flattened part of the curve to where it's vertical. But, I mean, the risk of failure is great. So that's one thing. But that's probably not the big thing. Okay, here's the real answer. I would love to learn another language because I feel so provincial when I realize I only speak English. Mm-hmm. And I have talked, most of my kids have one or two languages. And I just feel like only having one language only gives me one perspective on human experience. Maybe overstated, yeah. I would love to really learn a language. I'm skeptical that it'll happen, but
yeah.
That's the answer to your question.
Yeah, that's neat. I feel kind of like I need to or want to, it's not that I want to, but I feel like I need to learn and understand low voltage electricity better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. All of the transistors and capacitors and regulators and rectifiers and all that kind of stuff. For some reason, I feel like I need to get my arms around that a little better. And maybe that's just electricity in general.
Do it, because I know nothing of that stuff.
Yeah.
Do that.
Well, thanks for tuning in. If you guys have comments or feedback, you can leave them on YouTube. We really appreciate everyone supporting our efforts on our Spec House, on our podcast, and as we kind of build this social media brand. And I guess we should have made that point in terms of learning something new.
Yeah.
This is, for both of us, the big area of learning, and it's kind of dominating, and there's a lot of different sides to it. So
yeah.
I guess that's the real answer. Most of the learning we've both done in the last 5 years has been related to
this
video, cameras, social media, software, tech, just all these kinds of things that are totally new. And I guess it has been energizing to kind of get better at it.
Yeah.
All right. We'll catch you next time.